All right, good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. We are in the Barnes Committee Room, Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:02 p.m. Today we have President Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Sumner, Representative Stutes, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Recording Secretary Kevin Allen, Moderator Zach Lawhorn, and my committee aide, Buddy Witt. Thank you, gentlemen, for your assistance today. We have three items of business today. First, the committee will take up the appointment of Edward Sinclair to the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. Following that, we will have an initial bill introduction and invited testimony for HB 124, sponsored by Representative Julie Cologne. And finally, we will take public testimony on HB 124, the Transportation Committee bill dealing with the definition of oil terminal facilities. But any questions from committee members before we begin? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to welcome Mr. Edward Sinclair, who has been appointed to the Board of Marine Pilots. And so, Mr. Sinclair, he is not online yet.
We drew.
So we'll take a brief at ease. Little change of plans here. Mr. Sinclair is apparently not online, so we're going to find where he is. But in the meantime, in the interest of moving things along so that Representative Cologne doesn't have to sit here and cool her jets, we're going to put HB 124 into the mix. So, let me find out where that is in the script. Okay, House Bill 124, License Requirements for Commercial Drivers, sponsored by Representative Cologne, will be given an initial bill introduction and take up invited testimony and then set aside. Representative Cologne, if you and your staff will come up to the presenter's table, place your name on the record, and tell us all about your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair McCabe, Vice Chair Vance, and members of the House Transportation Committee. Thank you for hearing HB 124 for the record. My name is Julie Cologne, representative for House District 11, and I have my staff. Introduce yourself.
For the record, my name is Daniel Robbins. I'm staff to Representative Cologne.
So HB 124 is a workforce bill. It makes one change to state statute. It repeals the requirement that a person hold a regular driver's license for 1 year before they apply for a commercial driver's license. The language being repealed was adopted in 1985, long before modern commercial driver training and safety standards were established. Simply put, it's outdated and no longer reflects real-life commercial driver training. Further, it is an impediment to young people who wish to pursue training for commercial driving. Today, there are more and higher standards than ever before. The baseline for training to meet these standards is called entry-level driver training, or ELDT. So ELDT was put in place last year by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. In addition, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration applies the same rules to all commercial drivers in all states. It was established by Congress in 2000 to reduce crashes of commercial trucks and buses. Under the new ELDT requirements, trainees are required to demonstrate a knowledge of driving and vehicle theory along with safe operating practices before they get behind the wheel. And once they pass the theory component, they can be issued a commercial driver's license learner's permit, which allows them to drive with a CDL holder in the cab. So this is a workforce bill. Young people who are interested in pursuing commercial driving training will potentially benefit, especially young people in rural Alaska who often don't get their driver's license when they turn 16. Also, new immigrants who want to drive a commercial vehicle would benefit by not having to wait for a whole year to get their CDL. Public and private organizations that operate commercial vehicles would benefit if more drivers are available. And ultimately, the Alaska consumer will benefit if the goods and services they depend on daily are able to move freely throughout the economy. So this bill was something really important to me, and Daniel will speak to this a little bit. But Anchorage has a growing Ukrainian immigrant population. Many of the people coming over were truck drivers in Europe. And this has been a big obstacle for them to get their CDL. They can't wait a whole year holding on to an Alaska driver's license before they start CDL training. So I know it's a problem all in Alaska, but in Anchorage, for sure, we need CDL drivers. It's a big issue, and if we can find a way to remove one of those obstacles, then I feel like this would make more people who want the CDL, they want to work, and just make that pathway smoother. So for support discussion, we have followed, invited testifiers, Joe Michael, the Executive Director of Alaska Trucking Association, and Joey Crum, the President and CEO of Northern Industrial Training, to provide some testimony, and they obviously are the ones to direct any questions about safety or training or any issues around that. I could have my staff do the short sectional or take questions.
Yeah, sure. Let's have Mr. Robbins do the sectional. He might as well talk. His dad was sitting in that seat talking earlier today. So.
Just a couple hours ago.
Okay. For the record, my name is Daniel Robbins. I'm going to read the sectional analysis. So Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 28.33.100A to remove Subsection 2, which requires an applicant for a commercial driver's license to hold a regular driver's license for at least 1 year before beginning the CDL certification process. Section 2, that's January 20, 2024, is the effective date. And if I may, can I just speak to the bill?
Absolutely.
Okay. So as Representative Coulomb mentioned, we do kind of have a little bit of a personal connection to this in that my mother and I are both Ukrainian immigrants, and so we've come across a lot of the Ukrainian refugees that have been coming to Alaska since the start of the war in Ukraine, and we can attest that a lot these refugees are ready to work. They want to work, and some of them did hold CDLs in Ukraine and would be interested in being commercial truck drivers. However, the requirement to wait 1 year before applying for the CDL with a driver's license is definitely a barrier. So if the one-year requirement would be removed, that would be very helpful for them.
Cool, thanks. So before we go to Mr. Michael and Mr. Crum, I thought I'd see if any of the committee members have questions for the two of you, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. How long is the training, the certification for getting your commercial driver's license? How long does that take?
I think it's at minimum between getting your permit and getting the CDL, it's 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Do you need a permit? Do you get a temporary CDL before you get your permanent CDL?
Through the chair, yeah, you do have to have a permit CDL before you get your CDL.
Oh, interesting. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kind of like boat driving.
I guess.
And if I may, Chair?
Yes.
I'm sure Mr. Crum, the invited testifiers, can speak to that a lot in more detail if you want.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay, so first up, Joe Michael, Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. Mr. Michael, please place your name on record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Michelle. I'm the Executive Director here at the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association fully supports HB 124. The passage of it would eliminate one of the many barriers to entry for people to begin a career in the trucking and transportation industry. Like the sponsor of the bill said, in February of 2022, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration implemented its entry-level driver training program, establishing minimum training requirements for entry-level commercial motor vehicle operators. The program came from years of engagement with safety organizations, the industry, and stakeholders, and it provides a checklist of over 100 different skill, inspection, and knowledge requirements that an applicant must prove proficient in before they are allowed to test for a CDL. In light of these new requirements and the training involved, we feel that the holding the regular driver's license for one calendar year is slightly redundant in this barrier to entry. A couple things that committee members could take into account is a potential truck driver's skills will be tested four times before being put out on the Alaskan roads. They'll need to get past a regular driving test, and then their skills will be tested again during the ELDT by a registered training provider.
Mr. Michelle, could you speak up a little bit? It's just we've got you up as high as we can, and it's just a little faint.
I'll get real loud.
There you go.
They'll get tested a third time when they go back to the DMV to take their CDL test. And finally, before any company lets a new driver behind the wheel, their skills will be tested by the hiring company to verify competency. The biggest regulator of safety in trucking in the state of Alaska isn't Commercial Motor Vehicle Enforcement, isn't the FMCSA or Federal Highways. It's the operating companies, insurance companies. Insurance and safety go hand in hand, and no company is going to let somebody behind the wheel of their $150,000 asset if they're not going to verify that a potential drug driver can drive. So with all these checkpoints, ATA feels that there's enough things to adequate safety that we could eliminate this redundancy and let a couple missing portions of the population into the industry, that being folks that came from outside of the country that were operating commercial motor vehicles in their home country. They still have to take entry-level driver training, but they wouldn't have to wait a year for people to practice their trade and provide for their families. I'm available for questions, and the real expert on the line is Joey Crum from NIT, who teaches truck drivers for a living.
Thank you, Mr. Michelle. I apologize for butchering your name at the front of it. I was kind of reading fast. So any questions from the committee's members? Representative Mina, let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, thank you, Mr. Michelle, for your testimony. I'm curious, what are the training standards in other states? Is there a similar one-year requirement to have a state driver's license, or is that waived in some areas?
Through the chair, it's somewhat of a patchwork throughout all the states. There are states that do not have a one-year driver's license requirement, and there was actually in public testimony, we're going to have some folks that can testify that some of the Ukrainian refugees that came to Alaska and found out they had to wait a year ended up going to Pennsylvania to practice their trade and are driving commercial motor vehicles in Pennsylvania now. So it's kind of a patchwork of different state regulations as far as entry to get your CDL.
Thank you.
Well, what?
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, another question separate, but for CDLs, are there any drivers who do this as seasonal work?
Through the chair, yes, absolutely. There's many drivers that do seasonal work, whether it be, you know, working, you know, long hauls in Lower 48 and then coming up here during the summer to do dirt work. There's folks that, you know, during oil season are running the haul road, but, you know, take their summers off when there's tundra up there. So there's a lot of seasonal work in trucking, yes.
Follow up.
Thank you. So if there's seasonal workers with a CDL, how has that one-year requirement to have an Alaska license impact non-residents who are working up here as truckers?
Through the chair, the CDL requirements and, you know, the vast majority, I'd say 95% of the regulations in regards to trucking are done on a national level. So their CDL, you know, is transferable throughout the nation. So, you know, they'd have a CDL, you know, regardless of whether they were just coming up here to work for the summers or during, you know, oil season.
Thank you.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm sorry, I didn't hear. I heard what the third step was in getting your license, but I didn't hear what the first and second step was. If you could just really briefly repeat what those steps were, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, I cited four times that there are somewhat checkpoints to verify a driver's skill. The first time would be when they were getting their regular driver's license at the DMV. You have to get your driver's license regardless of this bill passing. It just removes the one-year requirement. So you'd have to First, get your driver's license is the first one. The second time their skills would be tested is during the entry-level driver training. That is administered by a registered training provider to verify that they got the skills to even be able to go get tested at the DMV to get your CDL. And then the fourth time is the actual trucking company verifying that you can drive before they let you drive one of their vehicles.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate it, Mr. Michelle. Appreciate your testimony. I don't think we have any other questions for you. So next up, we have Joey Crum, who is the president and CEO of Northern Industrial Training. Full disclosure, Joey's a friend. And when I saw this bill, the first thing I did was call him, or email him, rather. And his enthusiasm for this bill is great. So I think we'll have some good testimony here. So, Mr. Crum, go ahead and put yourself on record and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just do an audio check real quick. Can you hear me well?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Joey Crum, and I am the president and CEO of Northern Industrial Training, commonly referred to as NIT. At NIT, we train people to go to work. We are workforce development specialists that work with employers and community organizations to determine what needs to be done to prepare a local workforce for opportunities. One of our strongest programs is training and preparing people to drive commercial vehicles. People from all over the state come to our facilities in Palmer or Fairbanks to attend programs, but we also train drivers statewide, including there in Juneau in partnership with Tlingit Haida and places like Kotzebue and Uktiagvik. When you work with as many people as we do, you see patterns in flow. We see the flow of people thinking about and ultimately selecting careers and pathways that get them to their goals. In that flow, you also identify barriers, and often they stand out like a big boulder in a stream, blocking the most efficient flow of water. I think that's a good way to look at this bill. HB 124 removes a barrier and allows for more efficient training flow. We see a lot of young people who are interested in jobs that require a CDL lose interest because of the current statute. Now, passing HB 124 is not going to show up on the Richter scale or move the earth, but it's something that is necessary and will help people, especially the most adversely affected people in rural Alaska. HB 124 removes an outdated barrier by removing the one-year requirement of having a regular driver's license before someone can test for a CDL. New federal rules implemented on February 7th of 2022 make the current statute moot. The new regulations, as you heard, are referred to as ELDT of the entry-level driver training, and they require additional levels of screening, performance verification, and training. The process to get a CDL requires someone to pass written exams at the DMV and a DOT physical to be issued a commercial learner's permit. After they're issued a commercial learner's permit, they have to pass additional written exams proctored by a federally registered training provider that cover dozens of topics. Then the person must pass a practical performance verification by a federally registered training provider before they can even road exam. And then the final step is the road exam from the DMV or one of DMV's approved proctors. There are many levels of performance, both knowledge and practical, baked into the process of getting a CDL. It is also important to note that vehicles such as 16-passenger vans or pickups hauling hazmat, which could be anything as nominal as 120 gallons of diesel fuel in their truck bed, require CDLs to drive. We need to pass this bill to remove unnecessary barriers that keep people from gainful employment. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, but I'll remain on the line and glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Crum, and I appreciate your testimony. Looking to see if there's any questions from the committee. Nope. All right. Thanks, Mr. Crum. And seeing no other questions from committee members, we will set HB 124 aside for a future meeting. Thank you, Representative Clum, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah,
thank
for
you.
Bringing this to us.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah, I think we'll take a brief at ease while I make. Okay, back on the record, amendments for HB 124 are due by tomorrow at 5 p.m., and our intent, my intent is to bring this back to the committee on Thursday, and we'll notice for public testimony and look to the will of the committee and see what you all think about moving it out on Thursday. So for right now, we'll go back to Mr. Edward Sinclair. So Alaska Statute 8.62 establishes the Board of Marine Pilots and their duties. AS 8.62.040A1 states that the board shall provide for maintenance of efficient and competent pilot service on the inland and coastal water of and adjacent to the state to assure the protections of shipping, the safety of human life and property, and the issuance of original or renewal pilot licenses to qualified persons. The board is a critical component in assuring safe passage through Alaska's waterways. This is Mr. Sinclair's second appointment to the board, and he is joining us by phone today. Mr. Sinclair, thank you for your willingness to serve the state, and welcome to the House Transportation Committee. Please place your name on the record and tell the committee a little bit about yourself and your experience and why you want to serve on the Board of Marine Pilots again.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. My name is Edward Sinclair. I live in Juneau, Alaska. Again, this is my second term that I'm hoping to serve on the Board of Marine Pilots. Before piloting, I served 20 years in the U.S. Coast Guard. Most of my years were in Alaska. And I transitioned upon retirement in 2002 to the pilot training program. Licensed 4 years after that, so I guess that was about 2006, I received my license. I'm coming up on year 17 of piloting. While a member of the Southeast Alaska Pilot Association, I've served on the association's board for many years, as well as president for 2 years. And I believe I just stepped down from being one of the officers on the board when I decided to reach out and become or apply to be a member of the Board of Marine Pilots, which has been very rewarding the past 4 years. We've been challenged with COVID when it comes to licensing without ships. The new pilots were unable to get a lot of their training evolutions done, and so that was a challenge for the board to come up with alternatives for training. We also had to come up with alternatives just for the testing, since the offices were closed and we couldn't have candidates come in and actually test, so we had to come up with alternatives to that as well. Some of the projects we worked on were to improve the process for foreign pleasure craft, better known as yachts, the foreign yachts that come up to Alaska that are seeking to get an exemption from pilotage. That's in the regulations, and so we reviewed the regulations that were quite a few years old to make sure they complied with the international regulations for yachts for when it comes to training, licensing, and carriage requirements, and what type of equipment they would have to have on board. That was a good project, and as probably most of you know, you start a project today, and it could be over a year before you actually complete it. So that took some time. Another rewarding part of being on the board is to work with different associations when they're trying to improve their bylaws, their training requirements for their trainees in each region. And one of the biggest, I think, accomplishments in that regard was we fairly recently made some regulation changes that allowed a trainee to circumvent, might not be the right word, but we, just like the truck driving, the commercial driver's license, there was a calendar driving the amount of time before you could become licensed. And so what we did is we were able to work with the associations and come up with additional training requirements that eliminated the need to, say, hold a training endorsement or stay in training for 4 years. You can actually get your license in 3 years so long as you've completed these extra training requirements, putting a higher value on the actual training rather than the calendar. I think that was a big improvement, and that was initiated by the associations, not by the board, which was good to see. So those are some kind of things we've been working on. We've got a couple challenges ahead of us in We're having a meeting coming up in about a week. One of the things that we're trying to do is revamp the investigations process. The board's hands are fairly well tied when it comes to learning about investigation that may be applied to vessels subject to the Piloting Act or pilot performance. And we want to try to skim information off of these investigations so that we can compile some lessons learned. It's hard to regulate licensees if you don't know what the problems are. And through the investigation, so much of this information on the investigation is held confidentially that we don't know what might be going wrong out there. And so we're hoping to improve that. So these are the, you know, we'd like to continue working another 4 years on some of these issues and whatever new ones might come up in the reporting. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of the committee members may have.
Thank you, Ms. Sinclair. And I have a question. I'm interested to know, I know that the pilots need to see all the different ports in Alaska, and I'm interested to know how well the ferry system plays into that and what your thoughts are from the board position on using the ferry for some of the experience requirements.
It's a critical part. I can speak most familiar with Southeast Alaska. There's probably close to 40 waterways that the pilot trainees need to visit with a minimum, I think, of 8 round trips, daytime, nighttime. And the predominant traffic in Southeast is cruise ships. And those ships don't do all the routes that are required for testing. And so we rely on other vessel traffic. Some of that is the cargo ships that come through, and then we are required to ride the ferries in order to capture the other waterways. As an example, maybe the waters in and out of Sitka through Peril Strait. They're narrow, they're tight, they're shallow, and we're not taking the cruise ship traffic through there. And so the only way to get those trips is to ride on the ferries. But similarly, in other regions, they have commercial traffic, that's coming in and out of ports, but there's other waterways where the ferries are going that the Coast Guard requires us to draw, to study, and learn before we're eligible for the state exam, the state licensing. When I was going through the training, riding on the ferries was pretty cumbersome. It was pretty expensive. But over the years, it just continued to become more expensive. And so the board was, hearing this, time again from candidates who were taking their final exam, when you'd ask the question, well, what were the biggest hurdle? Well, it was getting the trips on the ferry and the cost that they were having to incur to get those trips. Nobody's expecting it to be free, but the ferry system, had a system in place to allow non-ferry employees to come on board the ships and ride and get signed off on these waterways. They were requiring purchasing of cabins, a per diem fee that would cover the cost of meals, along with the actual cost of the ticket. So there was lots of expenses that were just building up, and I don't have the numbers, but tens of thousands of dollars it would cost just to ride the ferries to get your trips done. And it was somewhat of a deterrent, I think, for potential candidate, training candidates. And so the board and repository group twice to the state ferry system, trying to get a little support explaining our situation. I don't want to take credit that our letters did any good, but I have been hearing that the price is coming down. There's a little bit different approach to the cost associated for trainees to get on board the ferry. So I'm happy to say it's improving. It's not probably ideal yet, but we may be at the best position we're going to be in for a long time. One of the responses we had received from the ferry system was that the charges to the pilot candidates, the trainees, was to offset the cost of operating the vessels. And that, you know, quite frankly, hurts. We're state licensed pilots. You know, we're all working for the state. We're not expecting a free ride during the training, but we would expect some consideration, I think. And so I think that's happening now. And I'm pleased to hear that. So the issue is still there, but it's not as big as it used to be.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just have a comment, if I might. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say how much we appreciate it, and we appreciate your time, Mr. Sinclair, and I just want to express the fact that the Alaska Marine Highway System needs you as much as you need them.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? So, Mr. Sinclair, if you are reappointed, I would urge you to work with the ferry system, as we will, to try to find ways to mitigate the costs. You know, if there's a cabin available, in the military we call that Space A. You probably know that from your Coast Guard days. But there should be a way that we can make this easier for the Marine pilots who absolutely serve the state of Alaska in safety capacity. So with having said that, no other questions. Thank you for your time today, Mr. Sinclair.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
So in accordance with AS 39.05.080, the House Transportation Committee held a hearing on the following appointee, Edward Sinclair, to the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. The signature on this report does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. We'll take a brief at ease and sign the report. On the record, the last item on the agenda is HB 128, sponsored by this committee, the Transportation Committee. I would like to invite my committee aide, Buddy Witt, up to the table to give a brief update on the status of the bill, and then I will take up public testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Chairman McCabe and the committee. It's been a while since we spoke about HB 128, and since my time in the legislature, it's kind of odd that you would have a committee bill and then bring it up once and then wait so long to bring it back. And so I wanted to give a quick update as to where we're at with the bill. And if you recall, in our initial introduction of HB 128, this is on oil terminal facilities and the definition. And we have been working with the Department of Environmental Conservation as well as the stakeholder group who is interested or concerned about the definition of oil terminal facility and trying to find a way forward that both sides can agree upon. As you know, there is a sense of urgency with this bill. However, it doesn't make much sense to move quickly forward with something that doesn't work for all parties. I will say there have been a couple of meetings. They have been gone progressively well. I think we have or are very close to a compromise with language. I have a CS that is being worked on currently, and I hope that I'll be able to share it with DEC and the stakeholders, get some input, hopefully positive, and it will be something that we can bring back to this committee. But since we had the bill listed today on the agenda, the chair advised that it may be good just to give an update on where we're at. We haven't forgotten about it. We're still working hard behind the scenes, and we hope to have something to share with the committee soon.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Any questions for Mr. Witt? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I understand this is time sensitive. Is there a deadline? Have we looked at when a must pass date is for this bill to get through both bodies before it becomes effective this season?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I've not been given a hard deadline. There is certainly a desire to first find a statutory fix that works and doesn't make things worse, and then to get that passed as quickly as possible. I've been assured by the stakeholders, and Mr. O'Shea is online and can probably speak for them, but I've been assured that there will be fuel deliveries. If they're at the worst, my understanding is worst case scenario, there may be some delays, and because of a change in the way that they operate, there could be some cost implications for the end user. That makes sense. But I remain, and the chair remain focused on finding a solution that can avoid all of that. And so that's our goal, that's our aim, and it is to do so this session. I'll also say we hope to have a CS that will perhaps have a revised fiscal note in a more fiscally favorable light. Let's put it that way. So we're working on that currently.
Thank you. Any other questions? So I apologize to the committee. This part of the delay is the meetings. A lot of the meetings were scheduled when we were on the floor for the budget, and it just couldn't happen. So I think what we're going to do now is open public testimony. I don't see anybody online for public testimony, so I will do that. I will now open public testimony, and seeing none, Mr. O'Shea, if you're online and you would like to provide some public testimony, that might be helpful.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, APSHA strongly would like to get this resolved prior to the start of our season, which is coming up. The problem with the definition is that it would change some of our vessels to be classed as oil terminal facilities, which in turn would put a different requirement for spill response on us, and it would basically take us from a response planning standard of approximately 15% of the total capacity of a vessel to 100% capacity of a vessel, and change the time allowed to respond to a spill from the quickest possible time to a 72-hour cleanup of 100% of the planning standard. Approximately 50% of the fuel delivered throughout Western Alaska is done by tug and barge, and there is a lot of barge-to-barge transfers, basically going from a larger barge to a smaller barge going up into the rivers that could potentially have severe impacts. If we had to stop doing the barge-to-barge transfers, there is a high probability that the increase in time allotted to do that, that there will be locations that do not get deliveries.
Thank you, Mr.
So I would strongly support in getting this resolved as soon as possible, and I think we are close to being there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. O'Shea. We appreciate your testimony, and for the record, that was Kevin O'Shea, and AFSCA is the Alaska Fuel Storage Handlers Alliance. So seeing nobody else to testify, we'll close public testimony. Our next meeting will be Thursday, April 20th at 1 p.m., unless there's any questions or other business from the committee. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:44 p.m., and we are adjourned.